welcome to Futures in Languages, a podcast showcasing stories from UCF's Modern Languages and Literatures Department alumni. I'm your host, Christina Torres, and today we'll be talking with Dr. Ariadne Ferro, who graduated from Spanish and Latin American Studies in spring of 1996. She's an adjunct professor at IE University in Spain and executive director of the Association of North American University Programs in Spain. She is a certified ADHD coach and a board-certified ADHD educator. We're really happy that you could come back and speak with us for part two of your interview. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you. I'm really excited to be here.
I know we talked a lot about how you found UCF and your experiences at UCF in our part one. And here in part two, we want to jump in more deeply into what you've been up to in your career, which you've had a lot of really cool experiences, and I'm so glad you can share these with our listeners. So to start us off, could you share with our listeners a bit more about this term, ikigai?
Yeah, absolutely. Ikigai, I kind of serendipitously fell into it. I was looking for a coaching program, and I saw this ikigai coaching program that was being advertised on LinkedIn. And at the time, I knew about ikigai, what perhaps lots of folks who spend time on LinkedIn know about it, which is typically you see this Venn diagram and it's like, you know, what you love, what you could get paid for and all this good stuff. But I thought, you know what, this was just coming out of the pandemic when I think, or rather coming out of that first wave, right? When most of us, I think a lot of us having a bit of an existential moment of thinking, am I doing what I'm supposed to be doing? Am I on the path that I'm supposed to be on or that I want to be on? So I said, I don't know a whole lot about this, but it sounds like it's a journey I want to embark on. So I decided to participate in this program. And it was a wonderful moment because I learned not only was this Venn diagram a Western interpretation of ikigai, but that ikigai is a Japanese concept. It's not a philosophy even or a religion or anything like that. It's actually a quite, I don't want to say banal, but just like an everyday concept. And what I really enjoy about it is that it doesn't have to be anything grandiose. It just really means the value of life, right? What makes life worth living? So what is that ikigai kan? There's ikigai kan and there's ikigai. So what is it that makes you feel ikigai and what's that source of ikigai? And I tapped into that because I thought, I don't have to have, like I said, this grandiose purpose. I don't need to be the savior of the world. I just need to really tap into what it is that resonates with me. What it is that when I wake up in the morning makes me feel like, yeah, let's put one foot in front of the other and keep on going. And for me, one of the first sources of ikigai that I came up with was after the pandemic. I'd never, surprisingly, being of Cuban heritage and even living in Spain, I never partook in the whole drinking coffee custom. But after spending several months literally locked in my apartment during the pandemic, not setting foot outside, once my kids started going to school, I had to go back to my apartment and work from there because we were still working from home. And I realized that I wasn't ready after dropping my kids off at school. I wasn't ready to head back to my apartment yet. So living in a European capital, it's great because we've got cafes right on the ground floor of the buildings where we live.
So nice.
So I thought I was going to, yeah, oh, I love it. My ikigai. So I thought I'm just going to hop in and have a nice Mediterranean breakfast before I head on upstairs. And just having that moment of having my pan con tomate and my café con leche and just sitting there with myself and by myself for half an hour before it was time to go upstairs to go to work, to start working. It made such a difference in my day, just giving myself that moment that I thought, wow, that's one of my ikigais. This is really great. So anyway, it was a concept that really resonated with me because I thought, wouldn't it be wonderful if we could share with others that we don't have to be world famous or financially independent to be able to really feel good about the direction of our lives. Mm. So that's where ikigai came into play.
The first time I heard that term was in this documentary on Netflix about Blue Zones.
I was going to mispronounce
his last name. But he was in Okinawa and he was interviewing these centenarians and saying, okay, so what is it about Okinawa that really makes this population of centenarians so common? And part of it was that concept of ikigai. They also had other things. I mean, they had healthy diet and social support, mm-hmm. but exactly. A lot of it is like checking in with each other, like, hey, like, are you following your ikigai? And I thought, you know, that's such a lovely concept that, in fact, you yeah. know, as you were saying, we don't have to change the whole world, but it's all about doing the things purposefully that bring us joy and help others in our community, right? Like, it's about being yeah. local. And if you take care yes. of local, then that itself can lead to ripples of other things. And so I think about that too. And your story about just taking some time to get coffee for yourself reminded me of the moment in my career when I just decided, you know what, I'm going to do 10 to 15 minutes of yoga in the morning. I'm going to get up earlier. I'm going to do 10 to 15 minutes of yoga. If it's a good day, I can get to 20. But you know what? If I don't have time for 20 minutes, we're going to do 10 to 15. And I thought it just made me a better teacher, you know, like it helped me to be a better person for my students. And I noticed a difference. I don't know if they noticed a difference, but for me personally, I felt more centered at the beginning of the day. And, you know, so I connected with your story about taking a little bit of time.
Well, you know, that's one of the pillars of Ikigai, the joy of little things, mm-hmm. right? You don't, it doesn't need to be, and you know, and also starting small, you don't have to have these yoga marathons. You yeah. can just do your 15, your 10, 15 minutes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you discovered Ikigai, you studied Ikigai, and then I understand too that you decided to share this with others through being a coach. Could you share with our listeners a bit more about the Zun Zun coach?
Yeah, so the Zun Zun coach, I had been studying and training to become an ADHD coach for a few years at this point, just because of my personal connection with ADHD. And it was during one of the training calls that I realized or understood that Ikigai can really support ADHD coaching. But first, I think just for the foreign language majors out there, I think might be nice to tell the story of why I chose the Zun Zun. Mm-hmm. So in my mind, having ADHD, if I had to choose an animal for it, I would like to symbolize it, an analogy, I would choose the hummingbird. Hmm. Because the hummingbird is just nonstop, right? Like constantly flapping its wings. Yet there's a beauty to it, right? There's
sure.
It's a beautiful animal. And what I would strive to create with my ADHD work is to create a greater sense of connection. And what you were talking about before of the local part. So not only connection with the community, but connection with your local community, but connection to the wider community, which also includes nature, mm. which is very helpful. Mm-hmm. And then connection to oneself. So for me, just the hummingbird is a really good representation of how I see ADHD, right? Or what how I see that it could be. And as a nod to my heritage, the Cuban hummingbird is called the Sun Sun or El Sun Sun. Mm-hmm. And then as a nod to my PhD, my doctorate dissertation, which was on Spanglish, I said, well, I'll call it the Zun Zun, mm-hmm. you know, so it's, mm-hmm. so it just kind of, I chose the name because it was very representative of me in a lot of ways. But I saw that Ikigai could be a really great way to support that kind of coaching because those different pillars of Ikigai are really helpful for folks that have ADHD. It's that idea of starting small, the idea of the joy of little things, the idea of sustainability and harmony, especially with what you were saying of community. It's really helpful for our self-esteem. It's really helpful for our sense of worth to be able to rely on others, not only to rely on others, but also to lean into our role within that community, to say, mm-hmm. who am I in this community? Mm-hmm. And this is how I feel like I matter. It gives me that sense of rolefulness to be able to play out that role in the community. There's also a tenet of, I mean, it's tangentially, but I think pretty directly related to Ikigai. It's another Japanese term that's ibasho, which is the place or the people, the community, where you could feel like your authentic self. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's really helpful for any kind of person that lives with neurodivergence. You know, just with the people I work with the most, there's a lot of masking that goes on. There's a lot of how do I imitate what other people do so that I, you know, people don't criticize me, so I can keep my job, so I can keep my friendship. There's a lot of stress that goes along with mm-hmm. having to mimic or imitate how people navigate, how neurotypical people navigate in the world. So for me, that idea of Betty Basho was so important. It's like, how can I not only find that community of people who accept me for who I am and where I can be my authentic self, and also find my role within that community so that I could feel empowered, so that I could feel like I have a purpose, so I could also tap into that ikigai, which will help. It just kind of like it sets up the foundation that helps us with ADHD coaching, because ADHD coaching is about thinking, okay, what is it about myself that I really appreciate and that I could really act on that and maximize that? And then where are the areas that are giving me the most trouble, that are impacting me the most negatively? And how can I use my resources, including my community, to help me with that? Because I don't have to do it all myself. No one needs to do it all themselves. Mm-hmm. So it's that reliance on that ibasho, the reliance on the community. Mm-hmm. And it's the starting small. It's the taking small steps. It's the joy of little things. So I think it all really interconnects, and it's made my work as an ADHD coach much more fulfilling, because I do see the beauty in that collectivism and that community aspect of it.
Mm-hmm. I like what you're talking about, this community, the supporting each other idea, because I occasionally read things about how there's this epidemic of like loneliness, you know, in various parts of the world, and how people just feel very isolated, like surrounded by folks, but also feeling mm-hmm. isolated. And this idea of plugging in and thinking it's okay to reach out. It's nice to have mutual support, right? Like that's, mm-hmm. you take turns, like you support and then they support and then everyone supports. But this idea of not being alone and this idea of reinforcing community is just such a lovely way to walk. You know, as you said, ikigai, as you said, community. It's nice to hear all those pieces coming together towards that purpose of helping folks to feel like their authentic selves. So much of the masking thing. I remember reading somewhere, and I forget what it was. I was reading somewhere about how, like, in childhood, folks often put on a lot of layers of protection in their personalities. And then as an adult, it's about learning to shed those layers to become, again, your authentic self. I don't know if that connects at all with what you're seeing or doing, but that struck me. And I was like, oh, okay. Like the shedding of the layers to our authentic selves intentionally to then find what it is that we're supposed to be doing.
Yeah. And I think that that's why it's so important to find that community where you can be yourself. Because oftentimes, especially because what you were saying, since we've had these layers for so long, we're not even conscious mm-hmm. of what that authentic self is. Mm-hmm. So it's really the idea of where do I feel like when I work with a client, and I say, okay, so let's take small steps to do this. And I always ask, how does that feel? Mm-hmm. How do you feel it in your gut, right? You know, or whatever part of your body you associate with that wisdom, that instinct. Mm-hmm. You know, where do you feel it? Because we're in our head so often that it's really hard to figure out what is that authentic self. You know, who am I when I take out a layer? What are layers and what's really me? So we really have to learn to try to get in touch with that feeling, that instinct, that gut. Which is why I really like the idea of, especially with a lot of folks with ADHD, it's hard for us to do meditation and mindfulness and in the way that most of us picture it. But taking a walk in nature is a way to really help with that. It's a way to help quiet our brain. We're still active, but we're changing our scenery. So whatever we can do to help us get in touch with how we feel when we connect with that authentic self is really helpful. Mm-hmm. And when we're in a place or with a community that's accepting of us, it's easier to figure that out as well.
Yeah, I can see that. Out of curiosity, what would you say, because this is your area, for our listeners who maybe have heard the term ADHD but are less familiar with it, what is something that you, from your expert perspective, would like to share with the community of folks listening to this? What is something valuable and important that they should know about ADHD, either if they have it or if they know someone and care about someone who also has ADHD?
Oh, what a great question. I love that. Okay, well, ADHD is attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. And it's a type of neurodivergence, so basically just means a different way of processing and engaging cognitively with the world. The first thing that came to mind as you asked me this question, there's so many things I could say, but the first thing that came to mind was, for better or for worse, I guess on the one hand, the positive thing is that it's gotten a lot more visible. So there's a lot more visibility surrounding it, and I think that that's a very good thing. The thing that I want to be cautious about is that a lot of folks are self-diagnosing because of social media, TikTok videos, things like that. And I think what's important for people to know is that ADHD, so just because you forget where your keys are, or just because you like to do a lot of things and you feel like you're a pretty active person, but especially for those of us who are out there who are watching these TikToks and thinking, yeah, I'm forgetting where my glasses are all the time and they're sitting on the top of my head. That's just one sliver of what it's like to have ADHD. And also the fact that we have lots of devices right now. Our ability to sustain attention, everyone's ability to sustain attention has been greatly diminished. So the fact that we are looking for instant gratification all the time doesn't mean that you have ADHD. Yeah. So I guess what I want to say is ADHD isn't a deficit of attention. It's a dysregulation of attention, because folks with ADHD, when we're really into something, when we're in a flow state, I exaggerate, but we think maybe 30 minutes have gone by and maybe 2 hours have gone by because we're in such a flow state. So it's a dysregulation of attention. But ADHD also impacts people's lives in many ways outside from just that attention aspect. There are a lot of social implications. It impacts folks in a lot of ways, socially, with relationships, with impulsivity. So one of the things I think that's really important is that as a child, your ADHD may manifest one way, and as an adult, it manifests another. Mm. So there's a lot of comorbidities that are associated. So people with ADHD, it's common to have, for example, anxiety or depression. Some folks have tic disorders. So I guess what I want to say is it's not as simple as being distracted easily. It's not as simple as I lose my keys or my cell phone. There's a lot that impacts ADHD that when folks finally get a diagnosis, it's like, oh, that's why I did that, or that's why. So for people who suspect they have ADHD, or for people who already have, well, first, people who suspect they have ADHD, if this is something that is accessible to you as a person who suspects you have ADHD, I recommend that you go for an assessment from a reputable specialist. If it could be, for example, a neuropsychologist, that would be ideal. And people often say, well, but I don't want to have the label. And I understand that, though I think it's really valuable to have the diagnosis, because once you have a diagnosis, then you can understand the way that it's impacted you much better. You can understand which of the symptoms are the ones that have had the most negative impact on you. And then you'll know what it is that you need to do to have the quality of life that you want to have. Mm-hmm. You'll know what, you'll be able to be a partner with your healthcare professional to know what are the different courses of treatment that you want to pursue. However, if you don't have the ability to get an assessment, or for whatever reason, you're not interested in it, or you do have one, I would recommend that you do seek out whatever treatment plan is available to you. And the reason I say this is just because you don't have a diagnosis, if there's some kind of symptom that's really impacting you, you can still, and you should still, get treatment for it. I always recommend people go to a reputable specialist first. And then I really do believe in coaching, because coaching really helps folks with that accountability, with that support system. So yeah, I'm mentioning a lot of things here first, but I guess, so to put it in order, to summarize, I would say, just because a TikTok video resonates with you, that's great. And it may be a first step in discovering a diagnosis, but not everyone who relates to that video has ADHD. We need to realize that the pace of today's society, the immediacy of information, has really reduced our attention span. So that, number one. Number two, ADHD goes far beyond just dysregulation of attention. There are comorbidities, which means that there are other diagnoses that tend to coincide with ADHD. That's quite common. And it impacts many areas of our lives in many ways that can greatly benefit from treatment, and do greatly benefit from treatment. And number three, if it's accessible for you, I strongly recommend seeing a specialist. I tend to recommend first for an assessment, a neuropsychologist, and then whoever they may refer you up to afterward, to get the best kind of, or rather to get the most accurate diagnosis and the best treatment. And then once you know what's going on, then you can partner with your healthcare providers to get the treatment plan that works best for you. Mm-hmm. And if you don't have a diagnosis, but you still feel like you could benefit from support, then you might want to consider coaching for something like that.
Yeah. Speaking of language, the language to speak about something can often be very empowering, right? So even just discovering as you said, symptoms and discovering, you know, and taking those first steps and having the command of the language to talk about how you're feeling, mm-hmm. or the language about the direction in which you want to go to pursue your personal goals to feel better, right, as you move through life. I hear you talking about discovering the way to talk about it as the first steps. Do I hear that correctly?
Yeah. And not only is it, I mean, it's, yeah, absolutely. As a matter of fact, as you were saying that, I was recalling last week, even one of my clients texted me and said, how do I get over this feeling that I can't do anything right? And I know this person, and this person is very accomplished, very intelligent, very, and I said, oh, it sounds to me like you're in the throes of imposter syndrome right now. Oh, is that what that's called? And I think just knowing, number one, that you're not alone, mm-hmm. right? So this has a name because other people experience this. And number two, giving you that way to say something so you can even look it up yourself. You can bring it up to your specialist yourself. You're able to actually put words in it. I remember when my child, before he got his diagnosis, we realized that he was speech delayed, and he was quite behind in his peers in development. And I remember his speech therapist saying he's going to start to mature as soon as he gets the verbal capacity to do so, because as the more ways he has to describe the world around him, the more ways he can interact with that. And this is true for adults as well. Mm-hmm. The more ways that we have, this is what's happening to me, this is what it's called, it also frees you from this feeling of failure. You realize this isn't a moral failure of mine. This is just part of this condition that I live with. And because it has a name, then there's probably something that I can do about it, or at least mitigate it a little bit. So yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm. That's great. I hadn't thought about that before, but absolutely.
It sounds like you have a lot of different opportunities to reach out to folks in various ways, and you're doing so many different things. I know it's probably hard to answer this question, but for our listeners who might be curious about what your, I guess, daily, weekly life might look like, I know it varies a lot depending on the situation, but could you maybe share with our listeners what a quote unquote, like, typical day might look like for you, or a quote unquote typical week? Like, what are some activities that you might do in this career field?
Ooh, that is a good question. Well, as somebody who lives with ADHD, what I really like about my life is that I don't have a day that is the same twice, right? Mm-hmm. I don't have the same kind of schedule. So my work with the association, with the City Broad Association, is wonderful because it's part-time and because I can work from home. So I, for example, just before I connected here with you, I spent the last couple hours on meetings, on Zoom meetings. Mm-hmm. With my colleagues there. So I guess that's pretty typical, is maybe for an hour or so a day, actually talk to my colleagues and then spend the rest of the day answering emails or putting together projects and that sort of thing. For example, last Friday, we took a train to Valencia and had a meeting there. So there's always something special going on. Mm-hmm. This Wednesday, through the association, we're going to go to Strasbourg. So it's pretty fun. Then something else that takes up a lot of my time is my teaching. So I usually have maybe about an hour or so a day, sometimes two, where I teach. And then I never take on more than three clients at a time, because that's what I would call my labor of love. If I were independently wealthy, that's what I would do. So I really want to devote, you know, all of my attention, or as much of my attention as possible, to the folks that I'm supporting. So I don't have more than three clients. Actually, I have three clients. So I don't take on more than three clients at a time, so that I can space them out and give them as much attention as possible and be as personalized as I can. Mm. And then I still have my kiddos that I've got to drop off at school, pick up, take to after school activities, just like lots of families. Yeah. So I'm pretty busy, but I've got to say I enjoy it. It's a big source of ikigai for me also, is that especially the feeling I have that I feel like I am doing things that have a positive impact on people.
I resonate with what you're saying about having no 2 days being exactly alike. I think that's probably my favorite thing about working in academia, is that you have these creative arcs, right? You work on a project and then it concludes, and then you start another project and it concludes, and the semesters are, even if you're teaching quote unquote the same class, it lands differently with different groups. Absolutely. Right? And you make changes to adapt things for the groups as we all learn, because teaching is learning, right, forever. So I resonate a lot with what you're saying about it's nice to have something where you can have variety. Like the variety in a career can really be so satisfying, because mm-hmm. you're adapting, you're changing, you're moving through it. So
yeah, like now my big area of hyper focus right now is how can I use artificial intelligence for my classes, for my coaching, right now I'm all into this AI thing, because I think it could be really positive. I think it could be really helpful for students and for for the folks that I accompany in coaching.
Yeah, we're getting training on that. It's here. So we're going to learn about it. We're going to see how it can be applied. And I don't think we'll lose the need for humans, but it's so nice to have, the connections of different tools, right? Like what can we do with new tools that come around? Mm-hmm. It's great. Thank you for sharing those details about your day and your career and the things that resonate with you. I think it's great for our listeners, because often folks will come through and study language and they don't necessarily think about, all these career options. And this is really like the beauty of the podcast, is showcasing like, hey, there are all kinds of different things you can do with language. And we can answer that age old question that family loves to ask around Thanksgiving, right? Is what are you going to do with that? And I'm like, ooh, that can be a hard question for some folks. And sometimes you're like, give me a second. I'm still learning. I'm going to figure it out. Mm-hmm. But it's so nice to showcase different options that exist for them.
Yeah.
We have a segment, Ariadne, a segment called Ask Our Alumni. And we have a question from our correspondent. Are you ready to hear the question and then potentially answer the question?
Oh, I'm excited. Okay. Yeah, go for it.
So here we go. This is our correspondent, Miley.
What languages in your field do you think would be good to learn alongside Spanish?
Did that come across well?
Yeah, languages in my field Well, living in Spain, there's so many languages. I always think it's so great that Spain, compared to the U.S., is geographically so small, yet so culturally and linguistically rich.
Yeah.
Being in Madrid with Spanish and English, it's, you're set. But I would love to learn all of the co-official languages in Spain, and there are a bunch. I would love, I speak Portuguese. I haven't had a chance to use it very much here, so I would love to be able to use that here. Mm. There are also lots of different communities from outside the Iberian Peninsula, especially in Spain. Wow, there's so, that's a tough question to ask, because there's so many. I would love to be able to see or to find out in some way what communities are most in need of ADHD work. As a matter of fact, one of the projects I'm working on now is creating resources in Spanish, because most of my clients have been English speaking. And I think a lot of folks out there don't even know what is available. It was ADHD month last month in October. And to close out the month, I went to, what do you call this in English? Un centro de atención temprana, like an early intervention center for kids that have different kind of neurological or cognitive difficulties. And I gave the workshop. It was just a free workshop that I offered parents to kind of explain what ADHD was. And I realized, wow, they have such little access to this. Or maybe they have access and they just have such little awareness of it. And there's still so much stigma that surrounds it. So I'm actually working on Spanish language resources. So definitely Spanish is the first one where I am.
Yeah.
But I'm sure that there are lots of other communities here that could really benefit from resources in their language. And it's a matter of me going out there and figuring out who they are. And I probably won't be able to learn them, but I'm sure I could work with some really cool people who can speak those languages and help out and help out with that resource creation.
The power of collaboration. That's great. So we're coming up here on our last question for our podcast episode 2. And it's been such a treat to get to chat with you 2 separate times. Our last question here would be, what advice would you offer someone who is interested in studying Spanish or really any other language?
I would definitely support that. I have absolutely no regrets And as a matter of fact, as a Spanish major, I had no idea what I was going to do with it. I just really wanted to connect with it. But it's opened up doors for me that I never even dreamed possible. So I guess one thing that I would say is connect with why you want to study that language. What is it about that? Why does that resonate with you? Because once you've connected with the why, then you'll be able to figure out what you're going to do with it. You'll be able to figure out the what next. I wouldn't worry so much about the what you're going to do with that, because if just the last 5 years, the last 3 years have taught us anything can happen, the landscape changes completely. I really am a firm believer in the power of studying humanities and studying liberal arts. I really believe in the power of that neuroplasticity that it provides us, that power of adaptability and critical thinking that it provides us. So studying a foreign language is very helpful. It really supports all of that. But in terms of what do I do when I graduate, I think it's really important, and tying it back into the ikigai that we were talking about before, is what is it about studying that language? Why are you choosing that? Why are you choosing that language, and why that foreign languages, and why that particular language? Because once you can connect with that value, then you'll be able to find other things that resonate or that are consistent with that value. And then you'll be able to, and then you're going to start to carve out a path that that you feel passionately about. Yeah. And that's easy. And it's going to be easier to identify.
Mm-hmm. I like what you're saying about thinking about the why. I think that's really a powerful thing for the folks who are listening to remember. I hear you talking about the pursuit of curiosity, the pursuit of just intellectual exploration. And, you know, if you're pursuing the path that brings you that joy and brings you that curiosity, you can connect it possibly to your ikigai and then see what comes next.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I love it. Exactly.
Yeah. Thank you so much for joining us, Dr. Ariadne Ferro. It's been so lovely to chat with you.
I would love that. Thank you so much for inviting me, and much success to you in the podcast.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for listening to this episode of Futures in Languages. I'd like to give a shout out to DaVideo Guy for our intro and outro music, downloaded from freesound.org. I'm your host, Christina Torres, and our featured guest today was Dr. Ariadne Ferro. Tune in next time to hear more alumni stories from modern languages. For more information about Spanish, Latin American studies, and other language programs in the Modern Languages Department, please visit our website at cah.ucf.edu/languages.